All right, I think we can start recording now. So thank you everybody for coming. I'm sure 1 hour of Farm Camp versus 1 hour of this, this might be more useful. and thank you for those listening. And I know Dalga couldn't make it because we all understand he has JQ, but he's here in heart. So yeah, shout out to Dalga if you're listening. But let's just power through this really quick. I mean, I won't rush because I want to make sure you all do very well in the final. But the final is pretty much similar format, and it's going to be similar to the first exam. There's 18 multiple choice and then 5 short answers / essay questions. Like some questions, for last exam, the whole pharmacogenomic testing, yes or no. Like as long as you can support your answer, then that's what we're looking for. So some questions might be very open-ended, so don't freak out. And make sure you submit your paper before the exam. So we want to make sure that, we want to have all the exams and, all the materials basically done when the exam ends. So please make sure you don't forget to submit it. Hard copy or email is fine. Yeah? Problem set 9 will be due on, before the exam as well. So make sure everything is... I didn't even know there was a problem set 9, but yeah, I got emails already, so yeah. Good job. Let's just go through all the materials that you were responsible for. This time the stars are Golden State Warriors. So for the therapeutic range, this is from Dr. Longbow's slide. So just make sure that you understand that the therapeutic range, some drugs are very narrow, right? For example, warfarin, digoxin, these have very narrow therapeutic ranges versus those that, for example, ibuprofen might not have the most, critical window, right? So if you take 2 pills instead of 1, it's not going to, be very detrimental. But so that black line right there is what the therapeutic range is. So make sure you know, if this comes up, just make sure you know that that is the therapeutic range. Versus any other arrows. Okay. all right, so we learned a lot of drugs this time, right? Last time was Evacaftor. This time there's 10 more. But I kind of separated them into groups, CYP2D6, TPMT, 2C19, and UGT1A1. I think these are the 4 main enzymes that we talked about during this later part. And I think you're all, it's pretty drilled down in your head, codeine and CYP2D6, right? So that is definitely, you should know by heart now, because it's been out there for a long time. Azathioprine is TPMT, so, make sure you know, which drug corresponds to the most contributing enzyme. So if you never heard of this random enzyme, then it's probably the answer. So clopidogrel, omeprazole, and voriconazole are all CYP2C19. And you should definitely take consideration of these as well. I would definitely know these, by heart. Make sure you know these drugs for sure. So definitely study those. And definitely study, I think you all learned, the phase 1 and phase 2, metabolism and excretion from PharmChem, right? So you probably know better than me now. But just know I think this one doesn't have circles, but I think your slide has, circles. Know these ones. Definitely know those. For example, a lot of the SIPs are in phase 1. And what's the most majority of phase 2? UGTs, right? Yeah, all right. UGTs, all right. Phase 2, okay. All right, so let's talk about CYP2D6. So the circles, I asked some of your classmates, and I think the circles are the ones that you're supposed to know for the class. So make sure you know those ones, what they do. Two, star 4, star 5, star 6. If you have those, then you have, different, activities, right? Sometimes it could be non-functional versus sometimes it can be increased. So, and I think the follow-up slide was this one right here. This one that talks about so if you have a star 1, star 1, you're the wild type, right? So you're an extensive metabolizer versus if you are a star 4, star 4 example, then you're a poor metabolizer. So let's talk about codeine. So codeine, is it a prodrug or an active drug? Prodrug, right? So versus a star 1 wild type, What would a star four act like if they take codeine? Yeah, it wouldn't really work, right? The analgesic effect of codeine would not be as effective, right? So just kind of know those, kind of like, just that was just like one example, like how you might see like an application question. Like we're not just going to ask like, what is star one, star two, right? We might put it into like the concept of like, oh, this person's taking codeine or, you know, dextromethorphan, like then how would that affect, right? But you'll probably get codeine. Yeah, so. Yeah, so codeine, know this one. And know this, right? Like, you know this. Y'all understand this graph? Pretty much? Yeah, like, I mean, this is just an example for codeine, because here it's like the ratio of morphine to codeine. I mean, don't be tricked if we change the order. Just make sure you know that this right now here, the AUC is like the concentration in the body, right? So it's very evident that poor metabolizers have a very low concentration versus like ultra rapid metabolizers. But if this was an example of like, I don't know, a non-pro drug like Tylenol, for example, these would all be switched, right? You have to make sure you know that concept. Don't just, you know, be like, oh, this is TM, this is EM, this is UM. You have to make sure you look at the y-axis. Because if this is already an active drug, then it might completely change the answers, right? So know that one. All right, now let's talk about UGT1A1, the second enzyme that we talked about a lot. So this one, UGT1A1, we talked about it's a phase 2 enzyme, right? So it's not phase 1, all right? It's a phase 2 enzyme. And UGT1A1 here, it's responsible for the conversion of bilirubin to conjugated bilirubin. So if you have a deficiency in UGT, then have you all heard of hyperbilirubinemia? Yeah. So you have an accumulation of bilirubin, and that's what I think we call Gilbert syndrome. So I think that's pretty much what you should know about this enzyme, that it's a phase 2 enzyme. Yeah. And any questions so far? Or pretty good? Yeah. Yeah, all right, now let's move on to CYP2C19. So we talked about omeprazole, voriconazole, and what's the last one? Come on. Clopidogrel? Yeah. Right, yeah, okay. Yeah, make sure you write your papers. It's CYP2C19, all right? so let's see. For omeprazole, I just got this straight from like a paper, I think, from Nature or something. But yeah, what you should know here is that omeprazole, for example, is it a prodrug or an active drug? Active drug, right? So if you look at the poor metabolizers here, they actually have a increased cure rate, right? So when do we use omeprazole for? GERD, yeah. So for GERD, for example, I don't know exactly what this table is indicating, but assuming that it's for GERD, let's say that it's GERD. The cure percentage for a poor metabolizer was higher. And why do you think that is? Mm-hmm. So because you are metabolizing, in this case, because you have a little bit more active, because you are a poor metabolizer, you have more of a omeprazole in the body. And actually, poor metabolizers definitely advantage in this case. And that's actually, so the part that I got from the paper is actually like the package insert, for this. So it's definitely take a look at it. I'm not going to read it right now. But basically, it's talking about how if you're a poor metabolizer, you can use the recommended dosage. But if you're like a rapid or like an ultra-rapid metabolizer, then you should probably consider changing the regimen or decreasing the dose. Or not decreasing the dose, like increasing the dose, yeah. So in this, just know that like just because you're poor doesn't mean it's bad, yeah. So just know that each drug is very different and the responses are very different. So voriconazole, also CYP2C19. So I think that graph over there where the golden state is, I got it from the codeine. Does that kind of look familiar? Like you have to understand like different concentrations of ultra rapid versus like a rapid versus like extensive and poor. Like that graph, you can probably find it in a few slides before that for codeine. But essentially, like, that might be like a good application question that we might ask, like, you know, draw out the time versus, you know, I mean, draw out the concentration, like dose versus concentration graph. So that's kind of what we're looking for. So we might have you draw like rapid versus, you know, extensive versus poor, right? So so take a look at the example of codeine in your slides, and we might ask you to draw it for voriconazole. Yeah?
What are the numbers
on the axis? Oh, that's pretty much just, I just got it from codeine, but I don't know the exact units, but we're not going to say like, you know, the...
time versus concentration.
Yes, it's a dose versus, I think it's dose versus concentration, right? Can somebody clarify? Is it time versus concentration? Okay, so time versus concentration. So the x-axis is time. All right, and then the y-axis is the concentration. So, yeah. So definitely, we're not like, you know, you don't have to like put the numbers in here, but make sure like good job pointing out, like, make sure you label the axes with like the correct like units. But yeah, so know how to draw that for a particular drug in the case of voriconazole. So let's say that hypothetically you are a poor metabolizer of voriconazole. Then voriconazole is an antifungal, and it's not used as often now, but it was used very widely until like resistance. But it's a very phototoxic drug. So phototoxicity is one side effect if you have too much voriconazole. So like if you're a poor metabolizer, would you have a higher chance of getting phototoxicity or not, or versus like an extensive? Higher chance, right? Because you have more voriconazole in your body, right? So definitely know that. And so same for CYP2C19. There were a couple of circles here, like similar to the CYP2D6, right? So make sure you know what these alleles, you know, represent. In this case, I think CYP2C19, they're all non-functional. So if you have like a star two, then you're probably gonna be like you have a non-functional enzyme activity, so you'll be a very poor metabolizer, right? So, yeah, know that. And I think I wrote it right there. Like, if you are, they categorized it, like, to, you know, the poor metabolizers, intermediate, and the ultra metabolizers. Yeah. So, understand these, know these numbers, know how to draw a graph, okay?
Did you say this was an active one?
Voriconazole, I believe, is active. If somebody can find out and, yeah, question?
How are we going to draw a graph?
Whoa, that's a good question. I don't know. Let me check. We'll figure it out, okay? We'll give you scratch paper. Yeah. But that's a really good question. Yeah, technology is not, you know, always the best. Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good question. It's the best question I've ever got. all right, so now let's talk about race, ethnicity, and pharmacogenomics. So race and ethnicity can definitely be a very objective thing versus a very subjective thing, right? Like, it's kind of like what you identify yourself as. And that's kind of, I guess, what pharmacogenomics is trying to do, is kind of understanding that you're like an admixture, right? That's what Dr. Burchard does a lot, right? Like, just because I'm Asian, there might be, you know, some ancestral genes that might be like a different, you know, ethnicity, right? So those are kind of what Burchard's been working on. And I think that was kind of what I was getting at this slide. And so, for example, like CYP2C19, star 2 and star 3, out of Caucasians, Blacks, and Asians, which do you think has the most, like, non-functional enzymes? Asians, right? Yeah, so it's Asians, okay? Yeah, if there's... okay. All right, now let's talk about Dr. Wu's slides. Dr. Wu, I think, went through a lot of examples of different drugs, and ultimately, kind of why, you know, companies encourage and discourage testing. So definitely know the reasons. Like, why we want to do testing versus, I mean, why companies, you know, do all these research versus why they don't, right? So yeah, I think you can just take a look at these, right? I pretty much put them together. So yeah, just read those. Why they encourage it and not or discourage it. Any questions? Good? All right. And I think this one, pretty straightforward, right? There's four factors that affect those response and variability. So there's environmental factors, like physiological factors, genetics, and also DDIs, right? So these four are definitely things to take in consideration when you think of, like, does this drug gonna work for a patient? Okay. All right, so now let's move on to, like, the final few lectures, HIV. And have you all heard of the heart therapy? So heart therapy, this is definitely very important for this exam, but also for your therapeutics. So you'll see this a lot when you start therapeutics. But essentially, I'll actually move on to this one. So there's, so for now, HIV and to target HIV, and as you may all know, like with all this new drug development, HIV is now like, it's like a person with HIV has almost a similar life expectancy as like, you know, regular healthy person, right? So I think that's like some amazing things. And so far, to combat HIV, there's a lot of different classes of drugs. So these all act on different mechanisms, right? Because the HIV is like a part, it goes through a part, to the, for HIV to get infect a patient, it goes through different, you know, a very a set, you know, mechanism to get into the person's body and get infected. And these are just five different areas where HIV drugs try to target. So there's entry inhibitors, fusion inhibitors, reverse transcriptase inhibitors, integrase and protease inhibitors. And so, so the heart therapy, what it's essentially saying is, so usually heart is usually a three, you'll learn this more in therapeutics, but it's you use usually about three drugs. So you use two NRTIs. So this, I got this straight from the guidelines, and you'll be using this guidelines like forever and ever, third year. But so you use two NRTIs as a backbone, and then you can either combine a NNRTI or a protease inhibitor, or you can also combine like other drugs, but you usually start with two NRTI backbones plus something else. And why do you think we're doing this? So what do you think the whole idea of heart is? Heart therapy is? Why not just take one? Resistance? Okay, so combating resistance. Combating resistance through different mechanisms of action, right? You're not just using, so we're not just using three NRTIs or just three protease inhibitors, right? We're combining different types of mechanisms to try to tackle HIV in different, you know, dimensions, right? So that's the whole idea of heart. So when we ask, like, what is, you know, heart therapy, then this is, like, the main, this is the answer. Cool. So, yeah, that's the idea of heart and HIV. And, yeah, you'll definitely see this way more in therapeutics. So understand the six, why is it six and then there's five? Am I missing one? Entry, fusion. There's five? All right. Well, just know about these five, okay? Make sure. You don't have to know, like, individually, but when I say NRTIs, they are the, here, right here, the non-nucleoside and the nucleoside reverse trans. That's the RTI abbreviation. Yeah. But I mean, you don't have to know, like, the drugs within these, but just know these classes. And so I know the HIV lecture was pretty extensive, but so they talked a little bit about genetics, right? So pay close attention to this part. So as we all know, HIV is a RNA, right? Okay.
Before you go to the previous one.
Yeah. So
you said you were missing NRTI out of the six.
Oh no, NRTI and NNRTI are all reverse transcriptase inhibitors. Yeah. One is nucleoside and one is non-nucleoside, so that's why it's NRTI and NNRTI. But it just, I mean, these five is probably what you need to know. I'll change that to five major types. So for HIV genetics, so HIV is a single-stranded RNA, so it's an RNA that becomes DNA, right? And how does it become DNA? Yeah, so did y'all like go through like the mechanism and stuff like that of, or how do y'all know this? I didn't know it until third year. But yeah, that's pretty much the whole concept of HIV. And so just kind of know these characteristics. Two copies each, 9.2 KB in length. And this is kind of like the whole diagram of the GAG and the POL and the ENV. So for the POL gene in particular, that is what contains the protease, reverse transcriptase, and integrase, okay? Know this one. Know these three, right? If there's like, you know, a random like that I made up, then it's probably not probably the answer, right? So know these three. Yeah. Okay. And so HIV, to target HIV right now, the standard is, you know, there are a couple of, for example, I'm going to talk about abacavir for HLA hypersensitivity, but I think the whole idea of HIV and genomic sequencing is kind of what the lecturer was trying to get at. And there's two types of sequencing, right? We can sequence the HIV itself and we can sequence the patient, right? So right now I think the majority of sequencing is done of the patient, right? Before they're trying to take abacavir, we make sure that the patient doesn't have a HLA, you know, a messed up HLA, right? So I think the sequencing of the patient's genome is kind of out there and it's, you know, pretty adopted. But I think the lecturer was also thinking of like, oh, we should also focus on sequencing the HIV genome as well. So sequencing the HIV genome is really, you know, a really good way to understand things like HIV resistance. And I just got this from the slides. HIV sequence fragment from one individual shows many mutations, right? So sequencing of the HIV, the bug itself, might be also a good way to combat HIV. So it's not just, you know, sequencing one or the other, but doing both sequencing is really important. Questions so far? Nope. All right. We're almost done. Abacavir, so this is the one that I talked about, HLA B*5701. This is the guidelines from the HIV that I just straight pulled up. Individual with this allele, abacavir is not recommended. And so that means that genetic testing is, I think, fairly accepted right now. So if they have a testing center, they, before giving abacavir, they usually test the patient. And that's because for all the cases of hypersensitivity reaction, which is a really bad reaction, 48% of the people had this, you know, HLA B*5701. And know this, all right? It's not, you know, C* or D*, it's B*, and it's 5701, okay? So no HLA B*5701. And as the guidelines say, they would, and if they have this, they would probably avoid abacavir. And that's it, I think, for HIV, or is there? So, yeah, okay, so now we're talking about resistance. So HIV resistance, same as any other antibiotic resistance, it is, you know, a very huge issue. And just take a look at this slide, you know, it might show up, right? Just some concepts of drug resistance. Okay. So I think another interesting thing that we talked about among resistance is cross-resistance. The cross-resistance is not just for HIV, but also for any types of antibiotics. Like, the drugs that worked, like, 30 years ago, like, they don't even work now, like, right now. And even the drugs right now, they're slowly gaining more resistance. So, like, antibiotic drug research is always, like, a continuous cycle. And so cross-resistance in the case of HIV, does anybody know what cross-resistance means? Kind of? Like, kind of? Yeah, does anybody want to tackle it? Sure, go for it. Exactly, yeah. So we talked about the five classes, right? The NRTIs, NNRTIs, like the protease inhibitors, fusion inhibitors, and all that. So if you are, for example, this is also from the package insert that I got. So if you're taking didanosine, which is a NRTI, then it probably will affect you to take zidovudine as well as lamivudine. So in that case, you would probably have to change to a different class, right? So that's just how HIV is such a mean bug. It just makes, if you take this one drug, that then it might not have, like, it might be detrimental to take the other drugs that of the same class. And that's what cross-resistance is. And it's a really big issue in HIV. So understand cross-resistance. Like, we might say, like, what is cross-resistance? And know how to write what cross-resistance is. And, yeah, so this is epitopes and resistance. So can somebody kind of describe what epitopes are? Epitopes? Yeah? Mm-hmm. Exactly. So epitopes are what is being pretty much being presented, that like that bug or like, you know, that detrimental thing. And so HLA, so I know this is like very extensive and I didn't make this question, but so I'm trying to help you all. So HLA antigen is what presents the epitope, which is like the bug or something that's bad. And so in some cases, so like some people, did y'all hear like some people will like, you know, even though they have HIV, like they'll never ever, you know, actually get infected with it. It's probably because they have a protective HLA class. So like I might, for example, if I have this HLA class 1 variant, then even if I have HIV, like I have, like my tests show a lot of HIV positive bugs, like I might never experience anything because I have a protective HLA class 1 variant. And that's kind of the whole idea of like, you know, they're in, like, because when the HLA protective, so if the epitope is, you know, a HLA class 1 variant, then even though it presents, it just kind of ignores it. So your body just, you know, because normally, like, for example, how we get, like, really sick from, like, a cold is, like, our immune system fights it, right? But, like, if you have this particular variant, then even though there's an HIV bug, like, our body's just like, whatever, like, I don't care. So, like, then the bug just leaves. I think that's, like, the most simplest and good way to, you know, describe this. All right, so just take a closer look. If you're a little confused, you know, it's all right. You know, so well, and because this is a lot of like immunology stuff, so we'll be very generous on this question. So just write whatever you got out of what I said, okay? Because I don't know either much. All right, 23andMe. 23andMe. The mission is a very. I think it's a very simple question. So what is the mission of 23andMe? Is that, okay? To give access to human genomes is the mission. Yeah, that lecture didn't have much, but, and I guess 23andMe combined with Genentech are making efforts to recruit patients with Avastin for metastatic breast cancer. So my question is, how can this help precision medicine, all right? So try to answer that, okay? I'll leave that up to you all. And I'm not just asking this question, right? Like, I'm probably asking for a reason, right? So try to answer this question by Tuesday, I mean Friday. What else? So, oh yeah, so there's also, we have to know about germline testing and somatic testing. So let's kind of briefly go through that. And very important, okay? So germline testing and somatic testing, does somebody kind of know the difference? Or like want to kind of guess what the difference is? So germline testing is, and somatic testing are very different. So, well, first of all, so the genes and chromosomes, they can mutate into either the germline or the somatic, okay? So there's two types of mutations like that your chromosome can take. And as you can see from the somatic mutation is kind of throughout your life, you kind of have this, you know, mutation, and it's not dependent on, you know, it doesn't pass it along to your children or like your grandchildren. Like it's not like your ancestor had this and now that you have it. That's more of germline. So germline, it's kind of like the sperm and the egg, right? So these germline mutations exist in germ cells, and they're passed on to future generations. So it's kind of like when you look at your like the past medical history of, you know, like the parents or like the grandparents, and they have similar like, you know, past medical histories. That's probably like a germline mutation, right? That's getting passed on. So understand the two differences. So we might ask like, what is the difference between somatic and germline? Then you should be able to briefly describe it. And what's 23andMe? Germline testing or somatic germline, right? Because that's what the webpage says. Yeah. So I had to go to the website and they said they do germline testing. And that, I mean, it makes sense, right? Because they want to know the ancestor stuff, right? So ancestor, germline, right? And spontaneous and, you know, things that are just, you know, going from one cell. So that one cell that I get, if I get a somatic mutation of one cell, then of course that cell is going to pass along the mutations, but just for me. So like the cells that keep reproducing in my body will then get like malfunctional, right? So that's somatic. So definitely know the differences between those two. All right, and I think we're pretty much done. This is the last part. So when you implement pharmacogenomic testing to clinical practice, there are a lot of things to consider, right? Cost effectiveness is the key for implementation, okay? So understand like the three R's, I guess, and try to, you know, think of like an example of what each might be. So just to go kind of from it, like briefly, like reluctance is like the pharmacists and doctors might not be, you know, very accepting to this because they're like skeptical. There's, you know, just because the pharmacogenomic testing gives you a result doesn't mean they can like diagnose a patient right away, right? There's a lot of other complications, so they're reluctant. Regulation, FDA, I think this might be a good example to write. FDA's critical path initiative. They're trying to, you know, make sure that the pharmacogenomic testing, you know, goes through a very streamlined process of, you know, becoming acceptable. But there's a lot of regulation behind, you know, a lot of things, right? So this is pretty open-ended, I think. You know, you can write any type of example that you feel like. And finally, reimbursement is kind of like the pre-midterm material, right? Like, there's, of course, it's great. It can be a very good diagnostic tool, especially if we find like a really good biomarker, and it can improve efficacy and decrease side effects. But it's, you know, pretty expensive, and for insurance companies to think about these like reimbursement issues is actually, it's a really whole other beast, right? So, any questions on things? That was pretty quick, yeah. All right. So yeah, thank you for pharmacogenomics and yeah. Huh? The graph. What about it? Oh, well, I mean, if we'll make sure you won't have any like confusion. We'll either bring scratch paper or, I mean, yeah, or to delete the question or something like that. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, maybe something like that, or I might just. No. But all right. Well, thank you, and thank you for a good quarter. Good luck on your other exams. All right. Thank you. Yeah, that's awesome.